With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon. My favorite color is pink, but if you piss me off, I'll only see blue. Shut the fuck up. I hate you.
Pride month may be over, but just like Bronwyn, I'm still gay.
Oh my God, you guys, it's Auntie's Girls. It's episode 230, and I am so excited to have my second in-person recording since the COVID journey began with one of my favorite people, a fellow vaccinista. You know him as the content manager, pop culture at Betches Media, the host of the Pop Alarm podcast, and the creator of Instagram, Insta classic, Insta famous. Put it is a price of admission is to follow it on IG before you get into the Housewives Museum. Bravo by Betches. You guys, it's Dylan Hafer.
Hello, Sarah.
You're so befuddled.
It's so funny to be back on the people's couch.
Can you believe also I need to get rid of the people's? We'll see. We're going to see what's happening with my lease.
You wanted me to bring a new couch with me today.
Yeah. You asked if you said, do I need to bring any equipment? And I said, yes, a new couch. Thank you so much.
I had one in my backpack, but I left it on the bus.
How dear. Was it blue velvet? Because that's what I want.
Oh, yeah. It was like what is it? A cloud couch? Like what? There's like a couch that like influencers
lives in the sky?
Have.
Oh,
no,
God.
I feel like it's the couch where like when you watch the Architectural Digest YouTube videos.
Oh, love.
Like they always are just like naming like artists and brands and, mm-hmm. you know, designers mm-hmm. as if they're just like, I mean, I guess for like the Architectural Digest, like people, they know, but they're like, yeah, like that's my couch from like Mama, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, oh my God, like one of those. Like, I would love one of those.
Dakota Johnson's Architectural Digest. You just got to go to that, guys. If you ever just need
she
to feel
limes.
Good, she loves limes. Her dog's cemetery or whatever, or cat, the some sort of animal is buried under her pool or whatever.
My favorite part of that Open Door, the series is Open Door. They're so good.
You guys have to, it's like 15 minutes of joy. It's honestly
is
bliss.
How adamant she is that they are not to see the inside of her bedroom.
Love it.
And like at one point when she is like leading them out of the yard, there's like a door open behind her and it's like her bedroom. And they're like trying to get a peek and she's like, wait, no, stop. And it's like, I mean, I support people's privacy. Like you know, celebrities deserve rights, like all of that, but it's so funny that like the AD cameraman is like trying to get a glimpse inside Dakota Johnson's bedroom,
and I think they're all slightly awkward because they know that it's off limits, and she's like, no, you're not. She's just like, love her so much.
I'm gonna tell you to fuck off with a smile on my face right now. Like, get the fuck out of my house.
I have to say, I've seen The Social Network at least 40 times.
Yeah.
At least 50 times. I've watched it over, and I went on a vacation in Miami one time, and it was the only thing I listened to. I've listened to the commentary bajillions of times. It's one of those movies that I vibe to. I love the music. I love the energy. I love the edit. I love literally everything about it. And I remember watching it and being like, who is that during her scene,
first film role,
and she was incredible. She's so magnetic. I love her. I think she's absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, she's one of those people where like her first, she like burst onto the scene,
yes,
with 50 Shades of Grey, and it was like that was such a whole like
mess
of a, you know, project.
Yeah,
and like nobody ever really took it seriously. Like People cared more about the soundtracks than the movies themselves.
It just wasn't sexy, which
is
a problem for a
movie
about sex.
And so I feel like Dakota really, I mean, whatever. She's like set for life from her parents, so it's not like I'm like boohooing for her. But she really had to like work up some credibility after that, I feel like. And I think she's done it. I don't know. I feel like probably a lot of like quote unquote normal people are probably still like 50 Shades of Grey girl, but I'm like, it's Dakota Johnson.
I did recently, it was on something, or it's, you can stream it on something. I've watched it out of order and I never read the books.
I've only seen the first one, and I've also only read the first book.
I think there are three.
I read the first book when I was in high school.
So I remember getting
I had it on my Kindle.
To hide it?
Yeah. My mom.
Because it's like rated R, if books were rated,
it's
right?
It's rated NC-17, baby.
Maybe I should read it.
I didn't tell my mom that I had read it until like a few years after. until I like knew she couldn't be mad anymore. And then she was kind of like, oh, like, how was it?
I remember my colorist assistant went up to me when I was like getting my hair done, whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, I have a, have you read this book? And I thought she was going to, I was like, what book are we, like, I was like, who, like, I was thinking it was some sort of like political something or whatever. And she's like, 50 Shades of Grey. And I had never heard of it. So I had no idea what she was talking about. I didn't Google it. And then I went to a dinner with some people shortly thereafter and they were talking about it. And I was like, wow, you guys are like big readers. Like, good for you. And then,
you're all just horny.
You're all just, maybe I should. Is it sexy? Do you feel the sex when you're reading? Like, does it make you feel, not like, you don't have to say like aroused, like, do you feel connected to it?
It was so long ago that I read it and I was so much younger.
Yeah.
That I feel like when I was reading it when I was like 16 or something, I'm sure I did feel aroused.
No, but like people were reading it and feeling aroused. I'm not saying
that was my experience then that I definitely, but also it was kind of like forbidden almost. Whereas like if I like sat down to read it, you know, like on a Saturday at a coffee shop now, I don't think I would be like, oh my God, I'm hot and bothered. Like, it might be like I might enjoy the reading experience, but I don't think I would be like, what is this doing to me?
I also totally wasn't connecting the dots even when I assume that we're the same age, because we are. So even when you're telling me you read it in high school, which is the same period of time in which, again, I was experiencing that hair appointment, and then at a dinner we were both in high school during that time. So I even though you said high school, I'm still associating you saying that with like being the same age that I was when it happened. So even me asking you like, oh no, did like, it make you feel good? Oh, no, I'm like, wait, this is it, a like, different thing. He's telling me he was younger.
Remember having my Kindle, I was in a community theater production of The Music Man, and I had my Kindle and was like reading it at rehearsal when I wasn't on stage.
Oh my God, what Marion would have thought.
But more importantly, have you seen the movie Book Club?
Where
Candace Bergen and Ree Perlman and Jane Fonda and somebody else,
and then somebody is like the child.
They're reading 50 Shades of Grey.
I have seen it.
It's so good. It's probably better than the 50 Shades of Grey movie.
It is.
Andy Garcia. Oh, he's so
hot. Oh, my God. Well, oh my God. Hurts me. He's so beautiful. Like, actually hurts my spirit. And he's also one of those guys who's like just so sexy that it's just, it hurts. It actually hurts that I don't have access to him.
That's one of those people where like, did you ever have the experience of like when you were a kid and like your mom like thought a celebrity was like hot or like had like a funny like crush on a celebrity, and you were like, oh, like, haha, like mom thinks this guy is hot, and then now I'm like an adult and this person is like 15 years older and I'm like, oh no, he's hot.
I don't remember my mom ever saying that anybody was like, oh, they're super cute or whatever. I do remember going to Bridesmaids with my family, and then after the movie my mom was like, that actor was really good, and it's like crazy that he like looked like John Hamm, and I was like that was John Hamm. She's like, it wasn't John Hamm. And I said, I bet you $100 that was John Hamm. I was shocked that,
like, ma'am, that is John Hamm.
That is John Hamm. So I won $100 there. But the only person I've ever heard her talk about like she has a crush is actually the husband of one of her best friend's daughters, who she's talked about him a couple times.
She's a cougar,
and she's like, he's so cute and blah blah blah, and this is like very Jewish, but she was like, you know, and he's not Jewish, but his family did genuinely like save a bunch of people during the Holocaust, and she's just like very into him for a lot of ways, and he is 40 years younger than she is, but anytime she talks about him it's like, all right, she's got stars in her eyes.
Thank God
my mom
doesn't watch Bravo, so she'll never hear this. She had a crush on Adam Levine for a long time.
Oh, wow. Specific taste.
Yeah. And like at one point, as like sort of a gag gift, my sister and I got her a phone case that had like a shirtless picture of Adam Levine printed on the back. And it was like, Mom, you love Adam Levine. And like, my parents are now divorced. I'm sure my dad was
Adam Levine,
like,
if you're listening.
Great.
I do. There was one Broadway related. Tony Yazbek was starring in On the Town. This Broadway performer, you guys can Google image him. He is very attractive and incredibly talented, like a true triple threat. He was starring in On the Town, which I saw three or four times during its run. He was unbelievable. And I reached out to him because of my like background in musical theater production, yada yada, and was like, hey, I'm going with my mom to On the Town, is there any chance that she can meet you after, because I knew that she would love it. So we go to On the Town, and then after I was like, oh, let's take a little walk and go here, and she realizes we're going backstage. We go through the stage door, and he was so sweet to her, took a photo for Mother's Day that year. I framed the picture of the two of them. I'm adorable, I know. And she just loved it. So she had a little Broadway crush. I mean, but who couldn't? He's so hot.
Oh, my mom always had American Idol crushes.
Really?
Yeah.
Like on Simon or on contestants? No, on like
contestants.
Are they ever attractive?
Yeah, there are a few. They're all like, I feel like they're all
too normal for me.
And they're all like, by the time you get to the end of the season, I feel like they're all excessively plucked. Groomed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They've been waxed.
Yeah, it was like highlighted. Okay, like David Cook, like we're going to give you like highlights and like this specific haircut and like, you're going to have the exact right, like the scientific right amount of stubble. Like,
that did not work out for him.
The American Idol makeovers really were something.
I remember when American Idol, and I know people still watch it and love it, and God bless. I remember when it was a moment.
I watched a couple episodes, the first couple episodes of this, like this year's new season, like the audition episodes. And I will say it is still extremely compelling. Like the way they do, they do a great job at like editing, producing those like clip the narrative, packages and stuff. Yeah,
the personal history.
And they've moved away a little bit from the like obviously bad auditions.
Oh, good.
Like there's maybe a little bit of like, you know, there's a lot of big like characters still. Like they definitely bring in some people who are like, oh, like they're going to laugh at her. But like it's not so much to the point where it's like, it doesn't feel like a joke that they're not in on anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it was a part of, like, bully culture.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between somebody who really genuinely seems delusional about their level of talent and, like, what their journey is going to be, and somebody who feels like they're, like, doing a bit to try and get on TV.
100% agree. I do have to say, I think my favorite generation, aside from OG, was Jennifer Lopez, Harry Connick Jr.
Oh, I was tapped out by then.
What's his face? Nicole Kidman.
Keith Urban.
Thank you. I thought they had great chemistry together. I was like very into them.
The judges now have great chemistry together because it's been...
It's the country guy.
It's Luke Bryan, Katy Perry, and Lionel Richie.
Lionel Richie? Lionel Richie would be the one to get me to watch.
And they've like... When they rebooted it on ABC, which I want to say was in like 2016 or 17, they've had the same judging panel now for like four or five of those seasons. They have a good rapport with each other.
Wow.
And Katy Perry, like, I think is the perfect person for something like that because she like, she is the kind of that like warmth that like, you know, Paula Abdul, I feel like kind of created that thing of being like the nice lady judge, but also Katy Perry is like extremely successful, very talented, like offers like, actually I feel like all three of the judges now like bring something very, very legit to the table,
which whereas, you
like,
need.
In the past they definitely, after like the first however many years, they got a little stunty, like the Nicki Minaj and the Ellen DeGeneres, and it's like, okay, like, you know, I mean, Ellen is a whole thing, but it's
she
like,
was such,
you know,
a bad
Nicki,
idea.
Like somebody like Nicki Minaj, it's like obviously she's a hugely successful musician, but it's like on a singing competition show.
Well, but then again, is it like, is it a, it is a singing competition show, but so much of it is about performance. So if you have somebody there, like a Mariah, had that worked out, I could see why it would make sense to have someone there who understands the power and impact of performance.
Yeah,
because so much about pop is not necessarily about singing, although maybe we've come back around to that. For a long time, it wasn't. It was sort of more of like the packaged ideal.
It's also just interesting to think about with a show like that, what is the goal? Because like, if you think about like the initial seasons of American Idol, you had people that were legitimately becoming like cultural, you know, stars, like, you know, your Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood, like Jennifer Hudson, those type of people. But, like, I don't know if that's so really, like, the point of American Idol anymore. I feel like it's just, like, they just want to produce, like, good TV.
Can I transition to something? Because this is organically what I'm thinking about.
Of course.
What's the goal of this season of New York?
You know,
Somebody had that conversation.
I feel like, well, it's interesting because, like, it's like, okay, so what is the goal of any season of Housewives? I feel like, first and foremost, the goal is, like, delivering entertainment over however many episodes. Mm-hmm. And that usually would be made up of, you know, some compelling personal storylines, some, you know, like, interpersonal, you know, feuds, you know, falling outs, whatever, friendships, fights, you know, make up, break up, all of that shit. And then, like, there's got to be an element of fun. Like, you know, I feel like every good season of Housewives has the, like, the good drama, but then also, like, the more lighthearted moments. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this season of New York, it's like we're missing the personal storyline from, like, half the cast. I feel like Ebony is giving personal storyline. Leah is kind of giving personal storyline. I feel like since the first episode, I feel like we haven't gotten anything from Sonia personally, which pains me to say. We're not getting a lot from Luann other than her sobriety, which is important, but, like, okay, she seems fairly stable in that this season, I would say. Like, it doesn't feel like an active push and pull mm-hmm. in the way it has been in the past. And, I mean, Ramona, we're getting real estate, maybe. But, like, I don't think that we're really getting anything that compelling. And I don't know. Like, we're not getting the moments of fun either. Like, it's hard in a cast with five people plus, you know, Heather, Brashan, whoever is going to be, like, mm-hmm. you know, trying to fill in the sixth slot. You know, there's just not a lot going on. And, I mean, sobriety is great for those who choose it. But, like, when you have a party and, like, it seems like the objective is, like, drunken antics and 40% of the cast isn't drinking, that's only going to go so far.
Or you get a different kind of antic and it's a different kind of experience.
Yeah. Like, I thought it was weird going back to the second or third episode of the season, how, like, when they got to Ramona's house in the Hamptons, that first night was the Burning Man party. Mm. And it felt like such a, you know, they're in this backyard party. There are literally only five of them there. And there's, like, an open bar. And after they did that, like, energy healer shrieking mm-hmm. in a circle type of thing, it was like the only activity was, like, now we're gonna get drunk. And it's like, maybe we need to rethink the, like, what these events are gonna be like if you aren't having, like, a big party and it's only gonna be the cast and 40% of the people, 2 out of 5 aren't drinking, mm-hmm. and, like, it's questionable whether it's, like, good for them to even be around that environment. It's like, and it was the same actually at this week's the dinner in Harlem. Yeah. One of the, like, segments of the evening was, like, this cocktail
that was
class.
So odd,
and it's like,
to me. That was so
odd. There are six
odd.
People here and two of them don't drink. Like, I for all that's been said about, you know, Ebony's, like, history lesson or whatever, the cocktails was the weirdest part of the evening to me. I was like, why are you having, like, a instruction recipe cocktail time?
It really made me feel like the question that I came out of that episode watching or thinking, the question that I came out of that episode thinking was, like, who is the audience? Is the audience, when we're talking about things to people, when we're a cast member on the show, is the audience that you're thinking of the people that you're filming with in that scene? Or is the audience the literal audience of yours watching at home? Because that makes a difference when we're having conversations, whether they're about passion pursuits or friendships or really complicated conversations around race or politics. I need to know, when you are talking to someone, are you talking with them because they are a vessel to the greater audience? Or are you genuinely trying to make a connection with them? And that's not geared toward Ebony specifically. I think it's a conversation or a question for, like, everybody, because right now it doesn't feel clear. And as a result, I deeply cringe watch these episodes because I don't know what I'm even watching anymore. Well, or why I'm supposed to care.
And I think with the scene at the end of the episode with when Ramona had Ebony over at her apartment, obviously, I mean, the whole, that scene from top to bottom was a rough watch.
It was
for
a mess. It was a mess.
Yeah, I watched it. Watched it twice on
Tuesday. I watched just that part twice.
And, you know, both times I felt like I had to kind of like grit my teeth to get through that scene. But then it's like on top of the specifics of that, it's like Ramona says at the beginning of that scene that she invited Ebony over because she wants to get to know the meat and potatoes of who she is as a person. And it's like, so if Ramona's saying that, she's telling us that she wants to really get to know Ebony and like get to a you know, like a deeper place with their relationship, which is great. Like, if you're going to be on these shows together, like that's what we would hope, because it's like that means you're actual friends and not just like coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
But then every single thing that Ebony tries to bring up, Ramona doesn't want to hear, doesn't want to talk about, doesn't want to engage in. And I understand, like, if there are certain topics that are less comfortable for Ramona, or like if she doesn't want to talk about politics, that's honestly, that's fine. But it's like, she's, you have to be willing to, you know, choose your battles and like push and pull. And it's like, if you're telling us that you want to get to know this person, this is who Ebony is, and this is what matters to Ebony, and this is what, you know, this was also the week of the election, which was,
can you imagine talking about anything else?
Right,
it's so disingenuous.
I wouldn't have wanted to hang
someone
out with
over
me that week.
100%. Well, I was crying to you about shit that week, remember? Oh, and I was like panicked and didn't know what's gonna, I was literally, I remember texting you crying in Central Park. Yeah.
But so it's like, when you're talking about who is the audience, it's like Ebony says later in that scene when Ramona's like, oh well, we had a lovely time, and it's like, no we didn't. And it's like, is that scene for actually for Ramona to get to know Ebony better, or is it because, you know, the producers or whoever think that the audience wants a scene of Ebony and Ramona one-on-one? Because it's like, to be honest, like watching the show 8 episodes in, I don't see a reason why Ebony and Ramona really should be better friends than they are.
I think my confusion is Ebony has said, which I totally agree with, like, I can't talk about the fluff with you if there are real substantial issues happening in life and you are refusing to talk to them, and you are, in a sense, gaslighting me by positioning this in such a way where my life to you feels like an opportunity for you to escape, you know, like, right, the stakes are higher than you saying, well, I just don't want to talk about this because, as she said, like, I don't have a choice. That being said, Ebony has also said, you know, we can't get past this if you don't value me as a Black woman and as a Black person and a person of color, which I get. However, Ramona doesn't. Like, Ramona, here's the problem, is that Ebony is saying, we cannot get past this until you acknowledge X, Y, and Z. And I get that. I appreciate that. I agree with it. But the crisis here when it comes to this cast is, like, Ramona is telling you she doesn't agree or care. She's telling that to you repeatedly. So we're in a dynamic where it's like, wait, we can't go on to other stuff until we make sure that the foundation is set up in a certain way. But it's never going to be that way. Right. We're trying to make Ramona into something that she's telling you over and over again. And by you, I don't mean Ebony. I mean Ebony and all of us, that she's not interested in that. She's going to attack back on that. She's going to leave a scene in her apartment. And essentially what I saw was her refusing to film and pretending that talking out loud to her dog was some sort of alternate choice, which
don't
is
go. We don't want to talk about politics.
But, like, we know Ramona is telling us who she is. So in this dynamic, what happens if we continue not to listen?
Right. And Ramona is not showing us she's not a person who is struggling with how to be better. Right. She's not a person who is, you know, doing the work and not quite getting it right yet.
She's not Sonia.
Right. She's somebody who is saying, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to think about this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be confronted with this. And I think she and Luann are honestly in a similar space with that. I think Luann's political leanings might be a little less problematic, whatever.
Who knows?
But I think in terms of actually like understanding the importance here, I feel like they're kind of on a similar page. But it's like, I would feel much different about this season if it felt like there was effort being put in on, you know, Ramona's behalf. But I think it's so obvious, at least to us watching, that that isn't happening, is unlikely to start happening at any point. So it's like, I think my frustration comes with like, I don't want to see Ebony like spinning her wheels mm-hmm. for 17 episodes and getting nowhere with Ramona, because then it'll be like, we watched this whole season and like, we could have seen Ebony like, you know, hanging out with her other friends and like thriving and, or, you know, maybe not thriving, like going through whatever she's going through and like living her life however she lives her life. And, you know, she said that, you know, her blackness is the most important part of her identity, and that's something that she's never going to stop talking about, and that it's not like the producers are telling her to get in there and make it about being black. Like, that's who she is as a person. And I am, like, so glad that she's showing that to us. I just, like, I wish it didn't feel so futile. And so I'm almost, like, it's hard because it's, like, yeah, that's who's in the cast. Like, who, you know, is she not supposed to film with Ramona? But it's, like, it just sucks because I feel like she's not getting to be, like, the best version of herself because of Ramona.
Right. And the actual, she has to adapt to Ramona. Otherwise, there won't be a filming that takes place. We saw that. We saw that literally had to happen, where she was in a position where the only chance that Ramona was really going to communicate with her or find a middle ground was when Ebony adapted to Ramona. Ramona's refusing. Ramona can't even say that having a woman vice president is an important step forward for women and girls. She won't even have that kind of conversation, which is, could not be less loaded. If you are,
that's not political. Saying it is historic for us to elect.
Which Kyle said.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I don't think that should not be controversial at all.
But she makes it controversial.
Right. She's equating everything, you know, she was acting like Ebony is like baiting her into saying all this political stuff.
Which is, and it's so, like, it's literally untrue.
It's literally untrue. And it's like, it's one thing, like I was saying, if Ramona doesn't want to talk about her political views on the show, that's fine. Like, I'm not sitting at home being like, God, I wish Ramona would tell us she voted for Trump. Because let's be honest, we know. But like, for her, the baseline of saying, like, yeah, like, it's the first woman vice president. Like, that's just a fact. Like,
also, Ramona saying, I refuse to talk about politics with you, so I will separate myself from production as a result. And essentially, nobody can force me to do this. But she's politicizing Ebony in such a way that she is making the actual idea of them communicating at any point, at any level, essentially impossible.
Right. I mean, when she tries to bring up her cute little fun fact about E.J. Walker and Ebony corrects her, and she's acting like Ebony is like attacking her for correcting her. And it's like, Ramona, like, you've come up with this, you know, you've heard about this woman somewhere, and God knows how many people you're going to like spout off to this, you know, little fun fact to try and make yourself seem more like cultured or knowledgeable or whatever. And it's like, why not thank her? Like, why not be like, oh yeah, sorry, like, good call, I should know her name if I'm gonna like tell people her story.
I mean, that's the epitome of fragility just in general. The fact that you are trying to share information to show how you have grown. The information that you're sharing is actually incorrect. You're saying the wrong person's name. And when you were talking about somebody who has made history and you say the wrong name, it is actually important that someone's... This is the thing with Ramona. Everybody is Tiffany. Everybody's Kim. Her help... who help her. Maybe her name is Elizabeth. Maybe it's Mary. She doesn't care enough to learn their names because she doesn't treat them with humanity or interest.
Yeah.
And she's putting that same level of disinterest and privilege and blind whatever on a historical figure who happens to also be a Black woman. The point of Ramona saying this, and when she is corrected, which is only going to help her not look like a fucking moron, and she says, how dare you do that? I don't want to be taught.
She's like, whatever.
What you're saying to that person is, I don't want to feel like you know more than I do, so I need to punish you for knowing information that I actually am telling you I also don't care to learn.
That she probably learned from like a Snapple cap yesterday.
She was like, probably like spooning with whomever, whatever, living her best life, swipe, you know, with Harry Dubin. And she was like, what is something that I can say that makes me look like more of a person instead of some sort of melting down robot? Because it's just the same shit all the time. But she's, you know, it's the warranty on Ramona is running out. And I don't mean that even in the context of this. I just mean that in the sense of like, this season is so fucked up. It's so old. It's so tired. And I just, the fact that, you know, when it comes to storylines, it's like, okay, what someone is doing in their life is not a personal storyline. That's just information that we have garnered because of maybe a 2-minute scene or something else. There, I don't understand the connection here, aside from the fact that three of these women have filmed together for a long period of time. That does not a storyline make.
By the way, have you seen the Netflix limited series about Madam C.J. Walker?
Yeah, with
Octavia Spencer.
Yeah,
it's really good. Self-made. Really check good. It out if you haven't. I feel like,
was that Netflix?
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Oh yeah,
it came out. I feel like it came out like very early. Like five pandemic.
Episodes. I wanna
ish. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, like I will say I have thought this for a while, but I feel like this season it's especially apparent. I definitely think, which I don't think is a hot take at this point, New York needs some kind of shake up, refresh, whatever you want to call it. And I feel like that will not really happen as long as Luann, Ramona, and Sonia are all still on the show. And I think it's tough because it's like, individually, I don't think any of them are like bad at being on Housewives.
Totally.
Of course not. I mean, like, Ramona, for all of her like bullshit, is like a great Housewives figure.
I mean, she's a Housewives historical figure.
Absolutely. And even in the last couple seasons, she's still given us some like ridiculous, hilarious, really cringeworthy. Like, she's given us moments in the last couple of seasons. And I think same with Luann. Luann, if I feel like since
Tom.
Yeah, like since Tom, like since the, you know, I've been traveling, I've been to prison, I feel like she hasn't given us as much. And of course, like, I love Sonia. I think Sonia's great. I think Sonia benefits from being the most flexible in terms of who she gets along with. But I think looking at them as a trio of these kind of, like, spiritual OGs, I guess, like, the show will never feel fresh as long as half, 60% of the cast is made up of the three of them. And so I really think, like, you know, last season, I feel like for kind of the first time, there was real talk about, like, is Ramona going to get fired?
Right.
Like, you know, it was kind of in the wake of the Stassi and Kristen and all of them. Like, it felt more like, oh, she's kind of problematic. Like, will that play into it? Like, people seem to be kind of over her on social media, which, like, clearly Bravo could give a shit about. But I feel like last year was the first time where there was kind of a tide of like, it might be Ramona's time to go. And I feel like this season, even more so, I mean, we're not close to the end of the season yet, but it's like,
I wish we were. Jesus.
I know.
It's so bad.
It's like, I feel like Ramona or Luann, it like really might be time for one or both of them to go. Like, I mean, the honestly, like, I don't think you can put it aside given the season we've watched, but like, even if there was no, you know, questionable, like, racist dynamic going on, I just feel like for the vibe of the cast in general, there needs to be like some momentum.
Well, there needs to be engagement. I felt like that was the strangest part of the event that Ebony coordinated and hosted, which was like, we're all pretending that these women are curious. And what we're learning, especially this season, is they could not be less curious. Sonia right. is curious. Leah is supportive and curious. But Lou and Ramona, when you talk about there was no air dynamic, it's like they're the ones sucking out all of the air in the room, because it's such an uneven kind of chemistry where we're pretending that these women are choosing to participate in a night that is in many ways set up to be educational. And it is so apparent. Again, it's like, who's the audience? Was the audience your cast right. members that you're filming with? Because as Leah said, like, these women aren't interested. It's not going to, they're not going to be engaged in this. And so it's like, should we adjust our thinking and our strategy for the women, even if we disagree with how they feel? Or are we doing this so that we can engage with the greater audience, meaning the Bravo community? I don't know what the answer is. I just know that this is like, it's such a uneven, odd, outsourced dynamic just as a cast, that it's never going to do anything when it comes to like this group coming together, because it just feels like the foundation right. doesn't exist.
Well, and we're getting like these weird clips of scenes that we didn't see.
Hmm.
Where,
oh, yeah.
When, like, Sonia, Luann, and Ramona are, like, talking shit about Ebony, basically.
Why didn't we see that scene?
I don't know, because it's, like, we go straight from, I don't know, that scene may have been before the Harlem party. I don't know.
The scene of them panning was Sonia giving her reaction to the Harlem party, if I'm remembering okay. correctly.
Sure. I believe you. I believe you. But it's like, okay, so they clearly, all three of them, you know, Sonia seems to be a little more on board with what Ebony is bringing to the table.
So much more on board.
Two.
Oh my God, 100%.
But they're all expressing these feelings of like, Ebony kind of talks about this too much. And I feel like it's like the editors are like maybe afraid of making these three look worse than they already do.
That's interesting.
And it's like, because it's like, if they showed us a whole scene that was just these three old white ladies talking shit about the black girl, then it's pretty apparent, like, you can't really be like, then to cut to Ramona being like, I just want to get to know her better. Like, I want to get to know her
when
on
you
a
know
level.
That's so obviously like, a lie. Right.
Right. And so I feel like they're kind of like cutting and pasting. So it's like, we only get like two little comments about how they were bored at the dinner. And it's like, okay, but then we have to pretend that all of a sudden Ramona like wants to be besties with Ebony, and it's like, that feels so inauthentic. And it's like, I don't, especially when I feel like Ebony is being treated poorly by Ramona, mm-hmm. I don't want to watch them try to be better friends. Like, I don't want to watch Ramona like cry into her arms, because it's like, she hasn't earned that. She hasn't earned like Ebony's time, basically.
I 100%. I could not agree more.
So,
can I ask you a question? So you moderated a Clubhouse that immediately followed the New York app this week, which was on what day of the week?
Tuesday.
I was 100% going to be like Wednesday, and I knew that.
Tuesdays at 9.
So you moderated, along with a friend of ours, Jared Alexander, a yes. conversation on Clubhouse with Ebony.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry I wasn't able to make it, but please, can you give us some insight on what was discussed and your feeling yeah. coming out of it, and if that has changed your perspective on the season or episode so far?
Yeah, so it was interesting. I know Ebony had reached out to Dave Quinn, also our friend who runs Club Bravo on mm-hmm. Clubhouse. house, and she had basically, you know, asked for this space to talk about the episode. Mm-hmm. And so Jared and myself, you know, moderated, and it was really great to hear Ebony. I know Ebony's done some other clubhouses and Instagram lives and things like that. I haven't been super plugged in.
Honestly, so, it's a lot of content at the end of the day.
It's a lot. Yeah,
you're a content creator. It's hard to like literally watch every single thing.
But it was really great to hear Ebony speak about and kind of unpack some of these Roni dynamics really on her own, on her own time, you know, in a space that, you know, was designated for that. And really, I mean, it was a very, like, you know, positive space around her. It's not like people were coming up and being like, why were you mean to Ramona? Like, it was, you know, I would say a pretty pro Ebony space.
Totally.
But it was great because she clearly felt safe and supported in that environment to really share more about, you know, like where she's coming from as a person. And it was, you know, to hear her talk about how, you know, there's this idea that like production brought her on to like bring up these topics of race and like they, you know, want to whatever, make the other women, you know, look better. I don't know. But to hear her talk about how this is something that is not like, it's not like an uncomfortable or a difficult topic for her to talk about being Black and her identity as a Black woman. And she's talking about how, you know, that is the most important part of her identity as a person is her Blackness and that she's not going to shy away from that. And she never would. And also that, like, you know, people are saying like, oh, like, why'd you plan this dinner? And she's like, because that's like, she's like, I planned an event that was fun for me. Like, this was what I wanted to do with these women. Like, I was excited about that. It wasn't like production came to her and were like, can you do an activity about Black people? Like, this is Ebony's shit. Like, this is what she enjoys talking about. This is what she enjoys sharing about, you know, her culture, her people, her identity, like all of this stuff. And so I think like that's the biggest takeaway for me is that like Ebony doesn't feel like she is in a position where she's forced to have these conversations. These are conversations that she is always having in her life. Like, this is who she is as a person. And I think it's important when you're watching it, whether or not you're loving her as a housewife, to really be understanding of that this is who she is as a person. It's not like something the producers have told her, like, get in there and talk to Ramona about race.
I don't know. I honestly don't know quite what to say because it feels like there's such an obvious disconnect when you have a cast of five and two of them have exhibited really difficult, problematic behavior based on white fragility or privilege or whatever the exact case or dynamic example could be. When you have five people and two of the five are behaving in that way, that's 40% of the cast. That's a pretty large number. And so when we're trying to have these kinds of conversations, or more aptly, when Ebony is trying to have these conversations, and you know going in that if your audience is literally, I can't stop saying this, but it's really the thing that I keep thinking about is like, when we're having this event, truly who is the audience? Because if the audience is genuinely just the women at the table, I don't know if you would construct the night differently. Like, what is the goal in that night if you know that Ramona is one of the attendees and it's literally like five people and Leah's sister? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is the actual goal? Because it's ultimately, is it to inform these women, to inspire them to learn more? Has Ramona ever exhibited an interest or curiosity in things outside of her wheelhouse? Like, why would we think that for something as important and also sensitive as this topic can be, when to one person this could be seen as a celebration of important Black figures, to Ramona, who is so obviously not curious about this and also absurdly fragile in her own, in any question of her intelligence or whatever else, what are we trying to do? Because these women, they don't want to participate in it. And is that enough of a reason not to do it? You know what I'm saying? Like, right. If we know the end, does that mean that this shouldn't exist? Does that mean it should have been changed in a certain way where it feels like it is more of a interesting dynamic from like the from an event perspective, where it's like maybe there's more of a spectacle there and we can, you know, find a way to like trick them into learning because their brains aren't set up in that way to actually like, receive information as Ramona, being of interest.
If Ramona didn't feel like she was in history class, would she have retained anything more about?
And is that the goal? Like, and genuinely,
the answer might be no. Like, the answer might be that there's the answer no way might for be Ramona no. to get it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's like there is no perfect situation because Ramona's kind of a shitty person. And, like, she's not the only one. And, like, Ebony, like, I think Ebony really is, like, doing her best in this situation.
100%.
But I'm sure she would acknowledge that she's not perfect either.
Totally.
And so it's tough because it's like really you're just it's a little bit like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. And I don't mean Ebony into the group. I mean like the whole dynamic. Idea of like Ramona being like somebody who is, you know, I don't know what's the right inclusive and, you know, has great, you know, mm-hmm. viewpoints about all of this stuff.
It's or like, even social graces.
Right. Like trying to impart all of this knowledge upon her, that's the square peg into the round hole, because it's like Ramona's, you know, little ear holes are so tiny
mm-hmm.
and there's so much that she doesn't know
and there's so much that she's uninterested in, disinterested in learning. And it's like I kept going back to the comment that we saw in the little throwback of the like scenes that you actually didn't yeah. watch because we wanted to protect these cast members from themselves. But in what Sonia was saying, where she's like, yeah, it was sort of a difficult event, because what she's saying is like the Ebony quote unquote educator thing. What she's not saying is the fact that, like, again, who's in the audience? Like, what she's saying is, like, you know, Ebony was talking about this in a way that, and I'm forgetting the exact phrasing and I apologize, but in a way where Sonia was like, yeah, maybe it came across as being preachy or whatever the language was. But the thing that we're not saying is like, okay, but then what's the reverse of that? Like, who's in the room? Like, how do you even decide the manner in which to, and we all know it's being filmed and it's also Ebony's first season. There's so many layers to this, which is why it's actually interesting from a nuanced perspective if we as white people, because we have the privilege of being able to step out of it and like zooming out on all of this. But, you know, there's Leah's confessional where she's saying, and I don't disagree with her, that it wasn't landing. I think everyone can agree with the fact that event didn't land. And I keep thinking, I can't stop saying this. I'm sorry I've said it 30 times, but cheers to 31. Also my spiritually biological age. But how do we deal with the fact that there is confusion about the audience? Yeah. It's not clear to me who this is being directed to, because it is so obvious and apparent that it is not going to work out in the best interest of anybody interested in actually talking when you have Luann there. Luann actually, I think, would have been interested in hearing more about Harlem. And I'm not saying this in any way that's like sarcastic, because when she says that like she and Jacques used to go to Harlem and like experience culture and things, I think she was probably most interesting when she was with Jacques. I think he pushed her to be a much more interesting person than she is comfortable ever being in. So she gets to depend on the fact that at one point, because of a romantic entanglement chapter or whatever, she was much more interested in being a more well-rounded human person and also New York City resident than she maybe is now, unless a cabaret is located nearby.
I also think she would have, she was not mad about hearing why she reminded Ebony of Billie Holiday. She was like, no, say more. I'm not hungry anymore. Keep talking. It's sort of in a similar vibe to me of Tiffany on Dallas this past season, that it's like thinking about kind of her overall experience on the show, which obviously was not extremely positive. And I just, I have a tough feeling that Ebony might kind of end up in a similar position after this season, where it's not that she had a bad season, because with Tiffany, I think at the end of the season, most of us watching, at least people that I talk to, are like, give Tiffany a fucking, you know, Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah,
like
Peabody.
For the work she did this season. And also, I enjoyed her presence on the show. But that it's like, at the end of the season, when you're dealing with this group of women, are you going to come to a place where you feel like you've had a positive enough experience that you even want to be there anymore? And I mean, we'll see what happens with Tiffany. It seems like there's mixed signals about whether or not she even want to come back. But Ebony also, I mean, if I recall when we were in this clubhouse room, like somebody, you know, made some passing comment about like, you know, I hope you're on the show for a long time or something. And she's kind of like, yeah, we'll see. Cause it's, I mean, like, for somebody like her, if she has all this stuff going on in her career and whatnot, it's like, why would you want to keep being in a position where you, where your job is to try and get through to Ramona Singer? Like, that sounds like the fucking worst job in the world. And I know she's not getting paid enough for that.
Because
it would be, I don't think I've, any housewife has ever gotten paid enough to try and educate Ramona Singer about race relations.
I don't know what is going to happen next season. I just have to say, in the best of times, this season leaves me befuddled. And it's so unfortunate. You know, like I do typically, except for the last couple of weeks, like I, for historically for AG for years, I have watched each episode at least twice, and twice was more in the minimum side. And the first time I watch, you know, I'm like texting, I'm doing whatever. Yeah. You tell me things about like, oh, remember that scene? I'm like, I don't remember that at all, because I'm like DMing somebody. I don't give it my full attention, but I also am able to like fuck with it for me.
Right.
And then the second time I watch it for AG, and like we were talking earlier, and I was like, I can't I watched the last scene a second time with Ebony and Ramona.
Yeah.
But I couldn't watch the episode again, which I just, it made me so depressed, to be honest. It just is so, I can't stop saying it. I'm sorry. It's so bad. And then I'm like, okay, well, my reward for that is watching Beverly Hills again.
I was just going to ask, how many times did you watch Beverly Hills?
Only 2.5, but yeah, but I will watch it 30 more times.
You watched it 2.5, but you were like glad to do it.
Bathing in the joy and the wonder of it all. And there are nuanced conversations that we can have, like, what does violate mean? And if you are assigning a sexual component to a term that you're literally being told repeatedly isn't meant in a sexual manner, why are we blaming that person for the thing that she never said in the first place and is telling you repeatedly she didn't mean in that way? Like,
I keep
there's thinking, real stuff happening. It's also just so much better. My God.
I keep thinking of the meme of Oprah from the Harry and Meghan interview, where she's like, were you silent or were you silenced? And I feel like it's like, did she violate you or did you feel violated? Because I think those could potentially be two different things.
I also think the thing that nobody's really talking about, that I'm sure Crystal is thinking because she is the person in the middle of this, is like, we're having this conversation about somebody's naked body being seen with them not wanting it to be seen and probably being worried that it was potentially going to be seen on camera because it's a cast member coming in who has talked openly about healing from disordered eating and body dysmorphia. And I'm not going to go into anything, but that's all I'm thinking about the entire time is like levels of violation specific to different circumstances are so wholly different for different people based on what you are bringing to the table in terms of like what healing your, you know, what trauma you've experienced, what you're healing from. And so her interpretation from something, if for an event happening, it may not have been anything for Sutton, who's like, well, Kathy walked into me, whatever. That's Sutton's experience. Sutton isn't telling us information that one would think if you think about it, and I get that I'm saying this as someone who's talked about a history of trauma that's led into disordered eating and body dysmorphia, whatever else, conversation from a therapist and psych, but I get that. It occurs to me because I happen to have experienced similar experiences, yes, stories, issues, whatever. So I understand that it may not occur to Sutton, but I do also think like that doesn't make all of you guys right for ganging up on this person who we should be treating with more sensitivity when it comes to something having to do with her own body.
Yeah. Okay. Couple things.
Tell me everything.
I feel like in terms of the word violated, I think people are being a little, people are taking liberties with what, with like coming up with their own specific definitions of that
1,000%
word.
1,000%
agree. And I think the actual dictionary definition is a lot more general than people want to act like it is. Like the word violated doesn't mean that somebody like, you know, did something like to your body, you know, like it's a lot. It's not as graphic as you, as they're acting like it is. Like, you know, on Watch What Happens Live, Garcelle is like, I mean, violated is a serious word to use. And it's like, I mean, like, yes, but also like, it's not like that specific to where it's like, no, like violated means this thing, this thing, or this thing. And Sutton didn't do any of that. But I also think like, it's really important when you're talking about the dynamics on these shows, but also in real life, I think this comes up a lot, that the way somebody personally feels about something is not always equal to it. It's not always somebody else's fault. So it's like, I think it is perfectly valid for Crystal to say, my personal feeling was I felt like my privacy, my space, my, you know, whatever, I felt like that was violated. And you can also, in the same breath, acknowledge that Sutton didn't do anything that she, you know, there was no malintent. There was no, you know, she didn't like, you know, she made an unfortunate decision to open the door. You know, like,
and it was, making the smart ass remark, which was just as cutting. Yeah.
Yeah. Which to me, like when
it's an awkward
when
moment.
We've heard the that audio, to me, that reads as like Sutton felt awkward and said something to try to diffuse the tension.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, I have never read that in a way that like Sutton was making like a snide comment. But I mean, whatever. If Crystal was in the situation and that's how it felt to her brain, her feelings are valid. And so I think these women are sort of acting like, oh, well, like Sutton didn't mean any harm, which is true. So Crystal, she didn't do any harm. And it's like, that's not equal necessarily. Like intending, not intending to do harm is not the same as not doing any harm.
Well, and I also think that everyone is pretending that they understand the definition of to violate or to be violated, right, and they happen to be wrong. So it's like that deserves to be corrected. Like even when she's telling you she still wants to use the word violated, and she's also saying, I'm doubling down so that you guys understand it in no way means violated as a regarding my body as a sexual being, a sexual form. It has nothing to do with that. And they're like, yeah, but because we only assign violated with the Me Too movement and sexual violence, that's the only way that you need to choose a different word. And because they are wrong, when it comes to information and being factually incorrect, it actually matters.
Right.
It's not about only and ever about intent and impact.
Exactly.
If you are also using the idea of questioning the intent of her use of a word, and your questioning involves an incorrect assumption about that word's definition, that matters.
Yeah. I think so like I don't have an issue with Crystal using that word, with Crystal sort of standing her ground in the sense that that's how she felt about the situation. I do think, though, where it gets a little more like dicey is the fact that we've seen these flashbacks of Crystal, you know, recounting this story a few different times to basically everyone in the group, and, you know, using, you know, describing it in a way that maybe makes it sound like, you know, there was more, you know, of an intention on Sutton's part, or like that she was, you know, saying something in, you know, maybe like a nastier, like, I don't know. And I think when this episode, when Dorit was saying, like, I mean, it's a different story, right, than how you told it the first time. I think it's Crystal, maybe because she is so new to the dynamic of this show and filming in general, maybe she doesn't realize that she did it like that and that her story has changed. And that I think, like, now in, you know, when they're at this lunch in Santa Monica, I think she has sort of like come down from, you know, the initial incident to a point where she can say, I know Sutton didn't mean anything from this. I felt this way. That's the end of it. Let's move on. And, like, you know, we're talking about feelings being valid. I think Sutton's feeling of, like, Crystal was kind of, you know, talking shit about her, coupled with the other stuff when she was saying, you know, she was crazy, manic, all of this other stuff. I think Sutton has a lot of feelings about sort of how Crystal was talking about her. And so I think it gets messy because it's not a one-way street, because then there, Crystal was kind of involved in this, like, you know, the way she was talking about Sutton, which I also think was, like, not great. So I don't know. It's like, I think it's like, I see both sides, but in the sense that I think there are, like, two separate issues at play, kind of. And I think that the women in this group are not necessarily doing a great job of acknowledging the different layers going on. And so it feels like, Crystal, like, why can't you just let it go? And, like, Sutton, like, why can't we just stop talking about it? And it's like, because you guys aren't actually even talking about the same thing.
And also, Sutton has violated her, not just in walking in or the end result was Crystal feeling violated, not just because of Sutton walking into her, but also Sutton saying, like, the goal of life is for us to be colorblind. And when you hold me accountable for that, I'm going to get upset because you say the word that girl. So we're having this conversation where Sutton gets to play the victim. But so many of us are remembering in our heads what we just saw one or two episodes earlier, which surely Crystal is also thinking about or maybe looking back on and thinking, which is like, cool. So Sutton is the victim in this dynamic because she's so worried about her reputation. I would be real worried about saying that the goal of the world is to be colorblind, and then telling a woman of color, I need an apology because I didn't like the way that you responded, essentially defensively, when I quite literally told you I don't care about your experience. Like, if we're going to talk about violation, I do think that there are ways in which that word can be used correctly and accurately. And I also say that as someone who should and absolutely does acknowledge the fact that we all have different triggers. Like, Sutton's triggers were also, her feelings, her experience were also triggered by the idea that she had just told this woman in a moment of vulnerability that her father died by suicide. And then however many hours or a day later, she's being told that she's crazy, that she's manic, whatever else. I mean, that is a different set of triggers.
Also, you know, when Crystal this week was like, oh, you moved a long time ago, like, get over it. It's like, I mean, I definitely think we have seen, I mean, we're only five, six, something episodes in.
Oh my God, I hope it's 30.
Right?
30. Oh my God, can't.
But, like, I definitely think Crystal has a little bit, I don't say this in a negative way, I say this in a very intrigued way because I want to see more. I think Crystal has, like, a little bit of mean girl in her.
Oh my God, and I die for
and
it.
And I love it.
We
and
need that energy on BH. And so I need somebody that's like, I'm not going to just lay down.
I think Sutton has.
And play dead.
I think Sutton what they're has used to, correctly clocked Fox that in a way that maybe the rest of the cast sort of hasn't picked up on or hasn't been the target of enough to really give a shit about it. But I think it's one of those things where it's like, I think Crystal is doing a fantastic job so far.
Agree.
And in saying that, I don't have to agree with every single thing that comes out of her mouth. 100%. And I kind of love that I don't. Because it's like, I think there are certain situations in which she is spot on and super correct. But there are also certain situations where I'm like, I think you're going about this kind of the wrong way. And I love it.
I stan a flawed human person. And I love when they are on fucking Housewives. Like, none of us are perfect. The standard can't be this person can never fuck up, otherwise I'm going to turn on them. That's the whole idiocy of stand-up is like, yeah. I absurdly love this person because they're absolutely great. And then the second, for some people, the second that they do something you don't agree with, it's like, well, they can go fuck themselves. That's not an interesting conversation to me. That's not a curious dialogue to have. And that's not how people operate.
I'm also super curious to see kind of how Sutton and Crystal develop within the group over the course of the season, because it seems like, based on interactions that have happened kind of while the season has been airing, it seems like Crystal is closer with the majority of the group than Sutton. Like, when they had that party at, I think at Kathy Hilton's house, like, it was maybe the second episode or something.
When
there was, like,
a viewing
party
for when she entered and she threw this whole fucking glam thing.
It was like, at that event, it was like...
Off camera, guys, in real time.
It was like everyone but Sutton and Garcelle, I think, were there. Maybe there was, like, one other person missing, but, like, it was definitely, like, oh, maybe Erica wasn't there. Maybe. I don't know.
Even if she was,
but
was she?
Like, it was, like, Crystal was, like, at the event. She clearly is close with Kathy. Mm-hmm. They were on Watch What Happens Live together. Like, probably the most fun Watch What Happens episode in years. Like, it's encouraging to me to see that this dynamic is developing and that Crystal hasn't been, like, ostracized from the group because of whatever she's bringing to the table, and compared with seeing Ebony come onto New York and basically immediately being sort of the outsider and having to kind of, like, put in all this effort, and same with Tiffany that happened on Dallas, like, seeing Crystal actually, like, slide right into the group and get right in the middle, but not in a way that makes her, like, a party of one fighting for her life.
She's felt to me like a natural fit.
Oh, absolutely. And it was interesting because when she was announced as a housewife, like, back when they were filming, we really didn't know anything about
her.
She is, you know, she's not somebody who's had a really public persona in
the past.
I didn't feel like I had much of an idea of, like, you know, where her alliances were going to be.
Yeah, I love,
like,
a private individual.
What her personality
was
going to be like. And so it's been kind of like a fun surprise over the last few weeks to really get to know her a little bit and to see kind of, like, how she engages in these social situations. And I'm loving it.
Same. And I also have to say, sort of similar to Kathy Hilton, who is not a private individual. She's been a public individual probably in many ways since the day that she married Rick and she became a Hilton. And just watching how fucking kooky she is, I die for it. I love her energy. I love the energy of the cast. I have zero complaints about Beverly Hills. I think they're doing everything.
It's
so good. I love watching, like, the Suttons, like, Sutton v. Sutton is really interesting to me because she self-sabotages so much and just, like, her reactions to things, and then pretending that, like, Crystal needs to get a sense of humor, which is so funny coming, like, genuinely. Like, I
when
love...
When she's like, oh, well, like, I'd love to see her sense of humor someday. I don't think I've seen it yet.
And you don't want to get me angry. It's like, babe, we've seen you angry every day.
Can
what
I
are
just
you talking
say,
about?
I keep forgetting and then remembering the scene in the trailer of your ugly leather pants.
Next week.
And I am, like, foaming at the mouth.
I am so excited for it. And I think it's probably going to be, like, the last seconds of the episode to stretch it.
Oh,
and I'm fine with that. Do whatever.
Absolutely. It will be like Sutton yelling one thing, Crystal yelling another thing, and to be continued.
You know they love a blackout.
They love a blackout. The to be continueds have maybe gotten a little out of hand, but if any show is earning them right now, it's Beverly Hills. I have to say, it makes me so happy. And I am, like, I genuinely never thought that this would be the case, that Erica's divorce is not even, like,
chef's kiss.
It's not even, like, carrying the season. Mm-mm. And, I mean, we're clear, like, you know, she just got divorced 2 episodes ago. Like, there's going to be more, like,
Fraud's
obviously unfolding.
Up.
But, like, there is so much more that's happening. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when filming was happening and the divorce news was breaking, kind of the fear in the back of everyone's mind was, like, is this going to be another Beverly Hills season where everybody is, like, hanging on by a hope and a prayer and a thread until this one maiden storyline happens. Mm-hmm. And then for 12 episodes, they're going to like milk this for all it's worth and it's not actually going to be that good. Because we've had that in the past with like, you know, Denise Gate, Puppy Gate, you know, what have you. And that's kind of why Beverly Hills has been so flat in the last few years, because they've relied on these kind of like artificially inflated scandals. And this to see that it's not happening like that is like.
Well, it's the group isolating against one, usually pushing them out. Right. But what happens when that potential isolation comes within the group itself? Like, what happens when it comes from within the majority power, and how does the majority power react to that?
Yeah, and it's super interesting because I understand if you are friends with Erica, you know, like if you're in the position of a Rinna, a Kyle, whoever, I understand the inclination to maybe give her the benefit of the doubt and to be like, okay, well, like, you know, she's going through this divorce, like, you know, like, we don't know what she knew, blah 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 blah. But it's interesting the level to which these women seem to be kind of like closing ranks around her. And I'll be super curious to see like if that's kind of something that they're doing publicly to kind of not give too much away about the season, or if, and if that really continues once we've seen more of it unfold on the season. Because Garcelle said on Watch What Happens Live this week that at the point we are in the season with filming, they, the like fraud news hadn't
reached them yet. If it had broken, it hadn't reached them. Definitely.
It hadn't broken in the fresh way that it did.
Yes.
Late 2020.
Yeah.
There were lawsuits, whatever. I don't think.
But it was like the house of cards came tumbling down in one fell swoop for a lot of people.
Right. We hadn't seen the headlines about like sham divorce. And so I think it'll be really interesting and really telling to see once that starts playing out on the season. Do the other women in the cast, you know, start to kind of distance themselves from Erica? It doesn't seem like that's going to happen. Because, you know, like, since more recently, they've still been on Instagram, hanging out, Fox, whatever.
Fox Force 5. Can't.
But it's, like, it's going to be really interesting to see, like, if things develop more. You know, we're supposed to be getting financial records.
Yes, she's forced to turn them over from like, her landlord.
All of this stuff. It's, like, is there going to be a point of no return where these women finally feel like they shouldn't be friends with her anymore? Like, is that going to happen?
Is it more likely that they may be nervous about talking to her for things because they know that ultimately they could get, like, subpoenaed? I mean, I think that's why she was like, I'm not going to tell you guys fucking jack shit about what's really going on.
It is so interesting to see her weave a web on this show.
And online.
Yeah, but, like, what she's saying...
She's a real sassafras, that one.
It's really interesting to see kind of, like, how she's going about this. Because I will say, on... I think it was last week's episode when she first, you know, walked in the door, was talking about the divorce. This is what happened with Tom. Like, she said more than I expected her to say. The question is, of course, whether any of that is true. How much of it is true. To what degree it's true. But, like, she gave more story than I was kind of expecting. So it's been interesting to watch. But like this week when she was saying, when she was in the car with Rinna and she's like, I don't know about any other woman, you know, like blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I don't know if I believe that. I mean, she had texts from Trisha A. Bigelow from like 2004,
2011. Yeah, why did those become suddenly available?
And like, granted, I know they filmed that scene before she posted those texts on Instagram because that was in December. So like, you know, there is a lot of interesting timeline stuff going on here that I would love an explanation of. Erica, if you want to.
Erica, if you're listening.
Erica, if you're listening, we'd love a timeline. But no, it's just super interesting because like, I don't know. I can't think of the last time we had a storyline like this where we had so much information out in the real world. And then we watched a housewife craft a narrative around it on the show. And like, it's like a choose your own
adventure,
choose your own what to believe of like, okay, do I believe like this half of Erica's story? Or, like, do I think that that detail is a lie? I mean, it's just, like, some of the stuff, like, when she's talking about, like, selling her clothes on Vestiaire and, like, you know, then she...
And Sutton's like, why are you doing this?
It's like, so I took the couch. I took the Chagall painting. Like, there are so many little breadcrumbs that she's dropping. Mm. And it's, like, which one of them's... Which ones of them are gluten-free? Like...
Completely.
It's fascinating.
How could she ever possibly attend BravoCon? Is there a world in which there's no way? People would be yelling. People would be, if they don't do a Q&A.
As far as I've seen, I don't think they've had her doing any press this entire time.
Andy said she's not doing press. And then the next day there were shots of her in the press line at the Nickelodeon Awards. So she's not doing press where she has to talk.
Right. She did a step and repeat, but she wasn't taking questions.
Right.
I don't think she's been on Watch What Happens Live yet this season. I'm curious to see if they will ever make that happen this season. It's going to be really interesting. It's hard to imagine for me that they won't have at least some of the Salt Lake cast at BravoCon. And like
Jen should be in town.
She's gonna
trial starts the day after.
I want to see a copy of like whatever document when she like requests to her judge to come to New York 3 days early for like a work event.
I want to see her Google cow for October. I think it's probably got to be something. But like, how could Erica in Beverly Hills? Listen, worst panel at BravoCon by far. Times
her Google
million.
Cow is probably a mess because Stuart can't organize it for her.
It's a very good point.
I wonder, is that like, okay, so the defendants are not allowed to have direct contact, but like, does communicating through like Google Cal invite count? Like, she puts in the...
It's like the Morse code of like RSVP.
She puts the like, what Stuart needs to know in like a separate doc, and then he like formats it into the Cal.
Dry cleaning. Pick up the dry cleaning, but that actually stands for like, have you laundered the bills? Like,
what? Stuart! I was gonna like pantomime Jen Shaw talking into her microphone, but then I realized I'm holding a microphone in my other hand.
I hope that Jen Shaw's jury, I hope that they call them the Shaw Squad.
Oh my god.
That'd be great. Oh my god, maybe I should. I think I actually have to like report for jury duty or whatever. Maybe like 6 months ago or something. I should probably find out about that.
I think I might still not be registered in New York for that.
I wonder if I could fit. Oh no, too. I wouldn't. They wouldn't let me on the...
The problem
they'd
is...
They'd be like, do you watch Housewives?
Sarah. We would get sent home from that jury...
In a second.
...questioning so fucking fast.
Oh my god, I'd love it though.
I'd be like, oh my god, can you imagine... What if we did like non-Bravo watcher drag? And I was like... Yes. I was like, oh, the Housewives?
I'm more of a Lifetime girl.
What's the...
Is that the one with the rose? Will they accept it?
Like, Nene? That one? Is that? There's the, and they're like, oh, okay.
Would love to see it. Also, we are here in New York. It is the Southern District. That's, you
know. The Real Housewives of what?
I'm single. Is that what you're asking? Are you interested? Yeah, I think it could be
the Bravo
truly
Network.
Something.
I think I saw Top Chef once.
Oh, poor Top Chef. Also, rest in peace to this season. What an ending to a fantastic season, you know.
Team Shota.
Team Shota and just some unfortunate news
team
coming
Shota,
out today about Gabe.
Team Shota and Team Dawn, get the fucking food on the plate.
And Team Shota and Team Dawn. Dawn, look at your watch. Set an alarm, honestly. When you have 2 minutes, they're shouting out how much time is left. Consistently leaving stuff. You know, when you talk about leaving stuff on the table, it's like, my God, just add to it first.
Right. Like, at the very least, make sure all of the plates have the same stuff on them.
Or just remember. It's not I don't think she ever forgot about the potatoes. Guys, this is like niche Top Chef. But like,
no, it's okay,
not that
I
she forgot
say,
about the potatoes. It's that she didn't have enough time to put them on. I don't think this has anything to do with like memory stuff or like, I think it's truly she has a timing issue.
It was rarely, if ever. So if you didn't watch the season of Top Chef, first of all, go watch it.
Yeah,
second of all, Dawn, who was in the final three, I'm spoiling it right now, but she... At least four times, I want to say, throughout the season.
At least four.
When they were serving the food to the judges,
didn't make it to the plate.
At least one of her components of the dish didn't make it onto some of the plates.
Which is a very, very big deal.
Right. Like, I was surprised at one or two different challenges. I was surprised they didn't send her home for that.
I mean, the potatoes, that really, like, gutted my spirit, to be honest, because they loved her dish so much. And they were like, the only thing would have been something to, like, sop up the...
And she's like, yeah, I had the potatoes. They were supposed to be the star of the dish.
Start with the star, babe.
I have to say, this was the first season of Top Chef that I watched, like, live or, like, live adjacent while it was happening. I've seen other seasons in the past, but not, like, you know, I've watched them on Hulu. I was surprised whenever I did post about it, how many people would respond with opinions. Like, in my mind, Top Chef is, like, more of a niche Bravo show, but I think it's actually less niche because people who don't watch Housewives and stuff fuck with Top Chef.
100%. I think it can be two different audiences, and I just have to say, like, I'm such a Top Chef fan. They have maybe the single best judging panel on TV. Padma is good at her job. Holy shit.
Everyone there is a judge so and a host. Fucking qualified.
They're so and they're so good. They're so, good.
Their dynamic with each other is great. Okay, the thing is with Top Chef that I didn't realize for a long time, and I think this season made me appreciate it, they are cooking at such a high level. Like, it is so unrelatable in, like, the cooking aspect, but the way they bring it to the viewer, the way they talk about the food, the way they raise the stakes with the challenge, the way they, like, kind of break it down makes it so exciting and makes it so much more interesting than other cooking shows where they're cooking kind of, like, basic shit, but, like, you know, like, on, like, if you're watching, like, Hell's Kitchen or something, they're literally making the same food every week, and it's just, like, Gordon Ramsay yelling.
Nightmare.
But Top Chef, it's, like, so elevated.
Prestige.
But the way that, like, Padma and Tom and Gail, like, bring it to us and talk about it, it's, like,
and it translates to the audience because we speak through the language of passion, and everybody on that show is so passionate. And you can know that someone's talented without knowing what an amuse-bouche is, you know. And if you don't know, the chance is likely that they're going to teach you. And unlike Ramona, we're all interested in learning.
Those little chyrons that they put at the bottom of the screen, like, explaining, you know, what a different dish is or what an ingredient is or a cooking technique. Like, whoever on their team, like, writes those and, like, adds them in, does such a great job. Also, I feel like Top Chef, you know, was from an era, like, it premiered around the same time Housewives kind of started. Like, it's very, like, old school Bravo. And I feel like that was an era of, like, competition reality TV where there were just, like, a million and a half different shows. And, like, most of them we probably haven't thought about in 14 years. But, like, the way Top Chef really, like, rose above that. And also, like, definitely at one point when I hadn't really watched Top Chef, I was like, oh, like, all of these shows just have, like, a hot host. But, like, Padma is, like, so fucking good at her job.
That's the thing that I have to explain to people when they're like, why should I watch Top Chef? And, like, is Padma good? And it's like, wow, like, she is extraordinarily talented. And she knows food. She knows how to humanize people. She knows how to translate even the judging perspective to the contestants, knowing how it'll be reflected on the audience. Tom is unbelievably fantastic. I'm also a foodie, even with, like, dietary stuff, and I fucking stand so hard for Tom that it's wild. And he's so good on TV and also such a talented superstar, genuine celebrity chef. And it's like, it's just everything is wonderful. Gail, like, is fantastic.
It was like a sea change for me when I realized that Padma wasn't just, like, the host.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
we also came from Katie Lee Joel, who, I mean, that was the first season host. But it was a different kind of show with her. Padma's die for Padma. This is Padma stan account.
I also love her. If you watch Top Chef, I don't know if this is, like, a thing that everybody picks up on, but when they talk about the prizes and it's, like, a cash prize, her commitment to the phrase furnished by.
Oh, my God. San Pellegrino.
But it's like, and then it'll be like, for this week's quick fire, the prize is $5,000 furnished by Campbell Soup. Like, every time it's furnished by. And I just love that specificity.
Also, I want to buy everything. It's like the love and admiration genuinely I have for these companies and brands for, like, giving my beloved contestants money. I like them more as a It Dawn, really is very
congratulations. You are the winner of this week's quick fire challenge. You win $5,000 furnished by our friends at Whole Foods.
I have to say, just shout out to San Pellegrino. I really do actually genuinely enjoy your products, and I love a glass bottle. And that's all I'll say about that. I just love
Top
it.
Top Chef is so good.
Dylan Haver, Top Chef is so good, and so are you. Tell the people how to follow you on social and listen to your amazing pod artistry.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Artist store.
Well, so my newest endeavor is my podcast, Pop Alarm, which is a pop culture news podcast that comes out 5 days a week.
Ooh.
And it's the episodes are 5 minutes or less. It's like your quick updates on what's going on in entertainment news and pop culture. Obviously, you can get that wherever you listen to podcasts. And I also am the co-host of Mention It All, a Bravo podcast, much like Sarah's.
Mm. Is it also about psychology through the lens of being a woman Bravo?
Much like Sarah's in the sense that it's about Bravo.
There we go.
No, very different vibe. We do that 3 times a week, also wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can follow Bravo by Betches on Instagram for all the Bravo content, and follow me at Dylan Haver.
And guys, while you're following Dylan, which you should be doing, you should be sending me your cash money, because that's my favorite thing to do.
Money.
Patreon.com/AndysGirls put up a super sized Satchel Spectacular hour-long exclusive Patreon ep unpacking the Potomac taglines and some crazy wild satchels, including one that about Croy that was actually very very informational. Wait, for me.
Croy Bierman.
I haven't
thought about him in a while.
Timely and wonderful. I was very into it. I was actually, it just gave me some clarity on some stuff I've discussed previously. So I loved it. And some great information from someone who works in the finance world about all things Tom and Erica and also, exactly why he fucked up.
Ashley's tagline.
Oh,
the only thing messier than two boys is me. Honestly, go off.
queen level energy on Potomac. Two quickies that I do want to touch base on, both of which mean something to me. And I just want to use the AG platform accordingly. Two great friends of mine, Lauren and Mariah Smith, who you guys may know from the Smith Sisters, which they host with their sister on Radio Andy. They've both been on AG, Mariah multiple times. They unfortunately in a terrible, they're going through a lot right now. Their father, Dr. Jonathan Smith, who is very renowned and well-known, especially in the St. Louis area, passed away tragically and suddenly, I want to say the week before last. And so I just want to send all of my love to Mariah and Lauren. And I also want to let you guys know that previous to his passing, the Black Repertory Company in St. Louis had put together a production called Do I Move You, based on a collection of his poetry and also his inspirations from the music and dance realms, jazz, religion, love, and family. And after he very tragically and unexpectedly passed away, they actually extended this online production. I watched it this week. I thought it was incredibly powerful. It's completely free, although, of course, donations to the St. Louis Black Repertory Company are definitely encouraged. And if you're able to do so in Dr. Jonathan Smith's name and memory, and certainly in honor of his unbelievably wonderful daughters whom I adore, I would encourage you to go to theblackrep.org. and just some information on the Black Rep: it's one of the largest not-for-profit professional African-American theater companies in the nation and the largest African-American performing arts organization in Missouri. He unfortunately passed away on Juneteenth, and I just want to send all of my love to the Smith family, and I'm going to include a link in the show notes to the Black Rep if you are interested in donating in his memory and in his daughter's honor. I'm sure that would be gratefully appreciated by all who knew and loved Dr. Smith. And I also just want to say on a very uplifting note, just kidding, that this weekend, July 4th, marks the 23rd anniversary of the worst day of my family's life. And I'm totally fine about it. The cool thing about loss is that they tell you sometimes it gets easier with time. It actually just gets a lot more complicated. And sometimes it gets a little bit worse. And 23 years ago, my brother was at a 4th of July pool party And he dove into a pool, broke his neck, and is now quadriplegic. And it forever changed my family in many ways. It broke my family. And it's something I was present for and will kind of live with that trauma forever. But there are ways in which I can find some goodness in coming out of that. You know, something my dad has talked about in a book he wrote about the accident was really about the waves of support that the community and his many friends of the family enveloped him with. And I feel that same support to this day. And I just want to really encourage anyone who is going to celebrate the 4th of July, which is like the darkest day for and it's wonderful because there's fireworks and people having barbecues and partying. And
God bless America.
Yeah, God bless America. There I am being like, fuck you the whole day. Yeah. But I just want to encourage you that if you are near a body of water, an ocean, a pool, a river, perchance, that you just keep in mind that the safest dive you can ever make is the one you do not actually take. And I'm going to, I've included a lot of information on that on my social media. Just really be aware, especially if you're a parent or a caregiver of young people, the summer months are the absolute highest for people to sustain spinal cord injuries. Good friend of mine, unfortunately, last month reached out to me because a family member of his sustained a high level spinal cord injury, which was a wild experience. And I've gotten that call from several people in my life since my brother's accident 23 years ago. And so just want to encourage, especially because the majority of injuries are young people, young men. There are a lot of things to keep in mind about safety guidelines, and especially because the majority of these injuries do occur during the summer months when you're not thinking about anything else but having a free, fun moment. Just keep in mind that, you know, there are a lot of families that aren't able to experience the kind of joy and escape because of diving injuries. And I just want to say that if my family's story can be in any way a PSA, and if I can share a little bit of the pain that has come from a split-second decision made by so many people every day, I just want to really encourage you guys that water can be deceptive, even if you're a good judge of depth, and have fun, do other things, eat a hot dog. Just please, please, please do not dive. And on that uplifting, wonderful note, just a joy, just what an upper of a day. Can I just say that my favorite moment from Housewives this week was Kathy Hilton saying that Mazel Tov meant Merry Christmas. And I just want to let you know that as a Jew, I knew exactly what she meant. And I appreciate her for that. And I would say Mazel Tov back to her. Mazel Tov to Santa, to the elves, to everybody else.
Mazel Tov.
Mazel Tov. Mazel Tov to all of you, all the AGs listening. Follow me on Instagram at Team Galley. Send me your money because I solicited Instagram follower suggestions for what to do for July 4th since I'll be solo here in New York City. And a lot of people said a massage and I'd love to do it. Ooh. So join my Patreon because I want to go to the Great Jones Spa. Be near a body of water that is in fact a pool that I know not to dive into because of the terrible tragedy.
Just floating.
I don't really, you know, since I got my hair colored, it's like I'm not gonna put my, you know, I'll dabble. I'll bring a bathing suit.
Who are you to get me wet?
I mean, listen, there won't be a plastic cup. Oh no, wait, was it glass?
It was glass.
I always, and I asked Kristen about that, and I forgot just now if it was plastic or glass.
Just make sure Kristen's not going to Great Jones.
I mean, I will wear a pop of color, and it won't be red, white, or blue, is all I'm going to say. I do look good in pink, so there's that. Guys, I die for you. Love you. Hope you're staying safe, staying sane, getting vaccinated if you can, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.